Hello once again, and thanks for joining us here on the St. Pete Catalyst Arts Alive podcast. My name is Bill DeYoung, and what do I always say? Well, we're putting the U in the arts community. It's a stretch, but I'm sticking with it. I'm so happy here to be with my friend Trish Duggan, who is the owner and operator and executive. What's your title exactly?
Founder or creator.
Founder, creator of the Imagine Museum, which if you haven't seen it, you need to go. As soon as you hear this interview, go over there to Central Avenue and check out the Imagine Museum. It is one of the largest, if not the largest, private collection of glass art in, certainly in Florida, maybe in the country?
Mm-hmm, maybe.
Enormous. Trish, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's always great to be here with you, Bill, and the Catalyst. I love, and you know that, I have the highest respect and admiration for you. You're doing a great job.
Are you listening, Joe? I wanted to read something that I found on your website, and we're going to start this way. There is no substitute for being positive and having a positive outlook. The most valuable asset we have is our imagination. This gives us the ability to create brighter futures and help mankind. This is sort of a manifesto for you. That's from Trish's website, by the way. She said that. You really believe that, and I love that, because we're not just talking about pretty things. We're talking about the philanthropy that you're involved in, and you help people. This is what you do.
Thank you so much. This is what I live. I live to do that. You know, whether it's my human rights work or it's creating beauty and uplifting, educating people, that's what I live for. And honestly, I feel if you find what you look for. So if you look for positive things, you're going to find them. If you look for beauty, guess what? You're going to find beauty. If you look for the ugliness and you stay glued to all the things that are horrible that are happening and the divisiveness, guess what you're going to get? Yeah. You know, I want to get people beyond that. And I think the experience at the museum is really a step forward to pulling people.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, you're drawn to light and beauty and all of those things and how to keep them fresh for people. But art, I mean, you're an artist as well, and you are such an expert in glass art. One of the things I love about going to the Imagine Museum and looking at this sort of art is, like all art, it looks different from whatever place you are looking at it. You go over here and you get a different aspect here. It also looks different the way the light's hitting it, which we can say about paintings, we can say about great sculpture, and all other art forms. But the thing about glass art is that the light comes through it. And that really is a sort of a physical manifestation of what you're talking about, you know, bringing light and beauty to the world, because you can look at it from a million different ways. What attracted you to this in the first place?
Glass, to me, it's a thrilling medium. I saw my first glass sculpture. I was at John Travolta's, and I saw a piece. The sun was hitting it, and I said, what is that? Mm. And who did that? And he gave me the phone number. It was Marlena Rose, and I became her biggest collector, actually. I live on the beach, and the light comes through my house in a magical kind of way, and it doesn't necessarily even look bad at night. It's fabulous when I've got it lit up at night. So, you know, it's, to me, glass, it's almost like it's alive. It's a very different medium. There are not a lot of artists that are willing to, you know, work with something that you have to heat up to 2100 degrees and it's liquid, it's molten, and you can get burned. And I wear a fireman's mask, actually, because it heats up my face so dramatically. I mean, when I'm working with the glass, I'm sopping wet. My hair is wet, my clothes are wet, and I'm a mess, but I love it. It's just thrilling to work with.
I did an interview with Marlena, and she's fabulous. And it might have been her, and it might have been maybe, Duncan McClellan or somebody that said that, you know, you have to get used to the fact that sometimes you're going to drop something and it's going to break. You can't really just go back and paint over it.
Yeah.
And so there's a sort of a, I don't know, is impermanence the word? I mean, there's a sort of a, you know, almost a temporary beauty to it, especially the way the light hits it. But that's the thing. I can't think of, there's a very fancy word for this, and I probably haven't had enough coffee to think of the word, but there's something that's, I don't know, not of this world, maybe? I don't know.
I totally agree with you. It's absolutely a magical medium. And, you know, there's in Buddhism, there's something called the Diamond Sutra, and it talks about the impermanence of different things that you can see, like a flash of lightning in a summer storm, yeah, or a bubble in a stream. And glass represents that medium to me. It's so fragile, but yet it's so strong. We have the internet. We wouldn't have the internet without the fiberglass cables going under the Atlantic Ocean. You know, so it's incredibly strong, mm-hmm, but it's incredibly fragile.
Yeah, yeah. And I often wonder how someone came up with the idea. Now, we're not talking about just transparent glass here, folks. These are, you know, the colors and the shapes are absolutely mind-boggling, and what the things that people do with this art form. And I can remember walking through the museum with Jane and her telling Jane Buckman, the executive director over there, and telling me this is how this artist created this. This is what they were trying to do with that. And your jaw just hits the ground, because how do you do working, as you say, with this hot liquid thing, you know? And I marvel at artists who can take it from here. I'm pointing to my brain, assuming I have one, and make something here that will affect other people. I just think it's just so, as I say, it's not of this world. And I think you can say that about a lot of art. So this, I was going to say, you mentioned that you saw it in a friend's house, which you mentioned later. This is, you know, you didn't come from, you live in Clearwater. Yeah. Okay. You're not from here. So where did you come from? Give me the backstory a little bit to where, you know, let's work your way up to discovering glass art. you have an amazing personal story, and I'm hoping you'll share some of that with us.
Okay, if you want to start way from the beginning.
Well, I was born and started a little 5,000 watt radio station in Toledo, Ohio.
Ooh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Well, yes, I was born in Arlington, and I went to Bethesda Naval Hospital, so I actually have two birth certificates. I count as two people right from the beginning, so I can be in business and I can be in art.
That's, I knew the there I was something special about you.
Anyway, I lived in Guam, and it was fabulous. Mm-hmm. It was just a really wonderful upbringing. I didn't have to wear shoes. I was free. I went swimming at the beach every day. It was amazing upbringing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember I had one branch for my Christmas tree. I lived in a Quonset hut. And I thought I had the world, but I used to lie down and I'd take a nap. My mom made me take a nap every day, and I'd look out and I'd watch the birds flying by. And mm-hmm, I thought, how magical, how are these birds flying? And then I'd see an airplane, and how are these airplanes getting off the ground? Mm. So I eventually, by the way, did a whole series on flight and illusion, which is in the Tampa airport right now. But anyway,
Back up. A series, we're talking paintings?
No, I have 24 glass panels.
Oh, eventually, okay.
Fused glass that's etched.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I've seen your etched stuff, certainly in the museum.
Well, somebody came by the museum and saw it in the hallway, all those birds and illusions, and said, ooh, we've got to have this for the airport.
Wow, that's very cool. So people see that going in and out every single day.
Yeah.
So you're in Guam.
Yes. So then we moved to Southern California. Mm-hmm. I was living in East LA. Mm-hmm. And I had an amazing teacher when I was in high school. He was Japanese, Mr. Nakamura. And we're still very good friends. But mm-hmm, he gave me a blue ribbon on everything I did and really validated me. It was incredible. If you have one teacher who really acknowledges you and appreciates you, that teacher can change your life forever. I wouldn't have the museum. I wouldn't be the artist that I am without him. And I've, you know, I got to gather with him when he was in his 90s, and I really thanked him. And I actually put a little plaque up in the museum in honor of him.
That's nice.
When we had one of the shows with a lot of different Japanese things, which we do now too, by the way.
You have the is it kimonos?
Yes, Karen Lamont's glass kimonos.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's unbelievable stuff. Yeah.
They're stunning. And, you know, I speak Japanese. I went to university in Japan. I studied woodblock print over there as well as at the university in Santa Barbara where I went. And I have the greatest admiration for that culture, because they pick one artist, say a printmaker, and they give him just such accolades and such admiration. And the state actually, or the government, supports that person. He's a national living treasure. So sword makers, doll makers, paper makers, they'll pick the top person. And that culture over there is so focused on beauty. Mm-hmm. It's just really a fascinating culture.
Simplicity, I think, is really a hallmark of Japanese art, isn't it? Yes. I mean, and I love that. I mean, you can almost take that to glass as well. I mean, it's, I mean, some of that stuff's pretty intricate, but at the same time, it's really just light and color. And yeah, and that's what paintings are. So you speak Japanese.
Hi, mochi no nihongo wa
nahashimasu. She does, folks. She's asked me if she could bring me a cup of coffee, but I already have some.
Kohi, they say coffee, kohi. So grew up in East LA and...
Were you painting? Were you drawing?
Yes, I was painting, and I still have some of the paintings from high school. I have mosaics that I did that mm-hmm. I still have. My mom saved all these things because mm-hmm. I gave them away.
Right. From the refrigerator. Yeah.
But it was this Japanese teacher that really changed my life because he was amazing. And I did woodblock prints. That's when I first learned to do that. And I worked with Japanese paper, which was extraordinary. I still work with Japanese paper. And then I went to University of California at Santa Barbara, and I studied woodblock print there. And it was a fabulous time because, you know, if you were, I was majoring in political science, but I took mm-hmm. one art class every semester. I say it kept my sanity. Mm-hmm. It was during the Vietnam War and all the protests.
Understood.
And they blew up the Bank of America at UCSB, and it was just, it was wild protest times. And so if... At the end of the year, the teacher picked the print from one student that was his favorite print. So every year, one student gave their print to the teacher. Mm. He actually took it. So at the end of the year, we were all the kids from the class were there, and he announced the print, and he showed it, and it was my print. I was
and
art was not even my major. And then he said, this year was so extraordinary that I actually kept another print. And everybody's going, oh, my God, I hope it's me. I hope it's me. And he pulled out the print, and it was mine.
Mm-hmm.
So he kept two of my prints.
Saw that coming. That's great.
It was amazing.
And that's like the Japanese thing of you know, fating someone, of honoring someone, saying, that, you know, you know, pulling them out and putting them on a pedestal, if you will, and saying, look at this. You know, that's very cool. How long have you lived here? When did you come here?
I came here in about 2006, but I was only coming for the summer, and then I ended up staying. Mm.
Yeah, it's the kind of place that does draw you in eventually.
Yeah, it was a fabulous move from Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about you're a globetrotter, and you've done so many amazing humanitarian things, and we are here to talk about art. And I'd like to let me speed the clock up a little bit. The Imagine Museum, it's 5 years old. This year, you told me before it's going to be a big fifth anniversary bash. Mm-hmm. Something's happening. Yeah. And why did you open a museum? Are you just like, you had so much stuff. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, there are, as we all know, there are several privately owned museums here in our area with Rudy Ciccarello's Arts and Crafts Museum, Tom and Mary James's thing, and your place. Why not just build a bigger house to keep all your stuff? Why buy a building and open a museum?
I just had that thought. You know, I have six adopted kids, and my boys said, Mom, there's too much glass in the house.
There it is.
I was Marlena Rose's biggest collector, and my house is really full of glass. And I just thought, I got this crazy idea, and I just told my boys as a joke, okay, well, then I'm going to have a museum. And I was, at the time, renting Chuck Books Sigma Studio doing glass, mm-hmm. started doing glass, and I told him my idea, and it was absolutely shocking, because in 2 weeks, he said, I know just the building. It's called the Imagine School, and I said, well, go check out and see if they'd sell, or no, it's for sale, and he bargained, and in 2 weeks, I went to the bank and signed the papers and bought the building and the property within 2 weeks of saying that. So I'm so grateful for Chuck. And he's, you know, he helped Duncan with his glass. He mm-hmm. helped Marlena with her glass. He's helped me. He's such an incredibly supportive person here living in St. Pete. And he's so validating to everybody he works with. He's really, I have to say, he's like a magical character.
Now, the Chihuly collection was already here.
Yes.
I mean, mm-hmm. was there any thought to, you know, just to play devil's advocate, as the saying goes, maybe the city isn't ready for more of this stuff. I mean, even though it's very, very different in a very vast collection from different areas. I mean, did you pause at the beginning or just go gung-ho for it right away?
Well, I actually visited Chihuly's museum. I visited his place in Seattle, and I've seen his beautiful ceiling in Las Vegas, and I admire the heck out of that man.
Yeah.
Boy, he was a real pioneer.
You got some of his stuff in Imagine.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't want to highlight him because he's got his own museum.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to take people away
from
his museum.
Don't give him too much credit. No.
Yeah, he's got all the credit. So honestly, he's a giant.
He really
but
is.
But what I wanted to do, and this was my whole goal, was to make all the other glass artists famous, because at the time I knew of 60 different American glass artists, and I thought, I'm going to get a piece by each of these artists, and I'm going to highlight their pieces. And that's what I decided I would do, is like help to make the rest of the glass artists famous. Like Guggenheim had her own museum and helped modern artists become famous. I decided that's what I'm going to do.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, do they appreciate it? I mean, glass artists, has become a sort of a, oh, by the way, there's some pieces of mine in this place in St. Petersburg, Florida, you should go visit. Is it become like an international destination now for not only for artists, you know, aficionados and appreciators, but you know what I mean? Has it become a global? You tell me, come on, give me some spiel here. This is what I want. People come from all over to see my stuff.
People come from all over the world to this museum, and I have never, ever had a negative comment from anyone. No. You know, I'll be in the parking lot and people be walking out and said, how do you like it? They gasp and say, never expected this, or it's extraordinary. I've gotten so many compliments from people, and people write me letters. And the artists have visited too, like Christina Bothwell. I'm getting together with her this afternoon, and she does the little kids. She does one little girl on a little stool or a bench. They're so sweet. And she came to the museum, and she actually cried and said, you don't know what you're doing for the rest of the artist. It is so kind of you. She said, I'm going to give you a surprise. I'm going to give you a gift. And she said,
thank you for that. That's a great story.
Yeah, she sent me the bench with my seven kids. I had a son who passed away. So she did seven kids on the bench, and it's in my museum.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
There's a lot of your stuff up. I mean, not a lot, but I mean, there's some of your materials up in there too. And we have to talk about the Buddha heads, because that's like one of my favorite rooms. It's 1,000 pieces. Is it?
It is. I did 1,000 Buddhas when I was at school over in Japan. I was told that if you make 1,000 Buddhas, you got a much better chance of going to Nirvana. So I thought, oh, well, you know, just in the off chance that there's something like that, I think I'll do 1,000 of them. So that was a 1 year, you know, that was my body of work for 1 year. And I have a quote in the museum, and I hand out quotes, by the way. I have a lot of little cards from Imagine Museum that have different quotes, uplifting quotes. And the quote that goes with that is, though you can conquer 1,000 men in battle 1,000 times, the one who conquers himself, his hatred, his prejudice, his reactivity, is the noblest victor of all. And I used to have people come and meditate in that room. But you're going to be very surprised, because that whole installation was taken down. Yes.
Why?
And I replaced it with something that is so stunning that a lot of times when people walk out of the museum, that's the thing they talk about.
Wow. So, are you going to give us a clue here? I need to come and see this.
Well, it's all about compassion and understanding, which is what we need. Things have gotten so divisive in our country, and I feel grateful every day that I'm an American, because I have freedom. And if you're raised in other countries, you don't have that kind of freedom. In fact, you know, in China, there's not even a word for human rights. So I feel so fortunate. So I really highlighted this year beauty and compassion or understanding. So I've used in the Asia, they have a person called the goddess of compassion. And I've done 1,000 heads of that in a lavender glass.
Oh.
And they're lit from underneath. It's really stunning. It's a showstopper.
I've seen your etched work in lavender glass. There's some of that was up there. It's kind of circular faces, and you know, that's beautiful stuff.
Thank you.
Was there ever a question in your mind, just parenthetically, I don't know if I can do this. I mean, these are artists beyond my scope, but you tried it and you've made amazing stuff yourself. How much trial and error was involved in turning yourself into a glass artist?
Well,
how much stuff did you break?
Yeah, things break. I have a whole glass graveyard, I call it, and I wanted to make like a big wall out of those broken pieces, because in Japan, they have something where they glue pieces together and then paint it gold on the cracks. And it's really revered art, you know.
That's kind of neat, yeah.
Isn't that?
Yeah.
So even the broken pieces you can do something with. And in the museum, I had a big, huge, beautiful blue and white pot from Japan, and it broke. And so I just put all the broken pieces on a mannequin. Yeah, so I
art is where you find them, man.
That's right. Yeah. So I have my huge glass graveyard, and people have taken those pieces and actually melted things down and made things with them, or... You know, and people have taken things out of my glass graveyard and used those in their home. Like I've gone into one home and there's my old piece that I would never want to show, but somebody saw it and asked me for it. I said, yeah, sure.
One of my favorite things that's on a shelf in our house is the potter Charlie Parker was showing me how the kilns work, mm-hmm. you know, 12 million degrees or whatever you guys work with. And there'd be like broken pieces. And he said, well, this is what kind of comes off. And I said, can I have this? And it's, you know, 6 inches, just looks like a, doesn't look like anything. But I think it's great. There's a great texture to it and everything. A couple of quick things, and I think there's something you, I don't know if you wanted to bring up or you're looking through your notes there. Mm-hmm. Why don't you go ahead? I'll yield the floor to you.
Good.
For a moment.
A lot of people are talking about transformation here in our society, and there's a lot of negative connotations with it. And I had an idea. Okay, let's take this word transformation and let's create a new age of transformation where we treat one another with compassion, love, and understanding, and we notice the beauty in life rather than the ugliness and the degradation. Let's learn to look for what is right in others, our children, our spouses, our friends, those who have a radically different opinion than our own. Aren't we all humans together on this tiny blue water planet? When we see unethical behavior, let's learn to ask the other person in a kind, direct way about what we see, whether it's in the office, at home, a public space, or even our own government. Let's learn to no longer tolerate lies, deception, and degradation. A person lies because he or she is afraid to tell the truth. Let's help each other move out of fear. Fear is the top psychological tool used to create authoritarianism and tyranny. Let's face our fears. Humans are incredibly creative, and all of life is exactly how you think or consider it. It is. It will never be any other way but this. Each one of us creates his or her own future and his or her own reality. Let's commit to creating a beautiful future for each one of us, our families and our friends, our business associates and our country and all the planet Earth. Let's take responsibility today to create beauty, to see the good and the right, and to help others do the same. Let's work to understand each other and be loving and compassionate.
That's absolutely beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. That's my focus of the museum. This will be actually up on the museum wall. I wrote it, and this is my goal this year to introduce this
concept. It reminds me of one of the tenets of the Baha'i faith, which is that, you know, we're all one planet, one people. You know,
yeah.
We're all here on this little thing. And not to get too deep, because I don't really go too deep, folks. That's exactly what it made me think of, was when it comes down to it, that's the only thing that really matters, is that we're here. We're here together.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rest of it should be, I don't know if logical is the word, but, you know, it should take care of itself. Jane Buckman, who is your executive director, mm-hmm. at Imagine, since you opened, who I love Jane. She's been great to me over the years. I don't know if she's retiring or resigning to go move on to, you know, somewhere else to do other wonderful adventures. But I should just ask, because that's out there in the news. Like, you got anybody in mind? Where are we with this, with the search?
Well, I have more than 40 resumes.
There you go.
Yes.
That's all you needed to tell me.
Yeah. And three people have run museums and done a really nice job.
Mm.
And there are other people too. And I'm constantly in the middle of interviews right now.
Okay.
For that and a CFO, we're looking for that.
Oh, fantastic. How involved are you in the day-to-day operation of the museum?
No, I'm not that involved. I really let Jane run the museum, and she gave me the hallways. So you always see my things in the hallways, right?
Yeah.
And then I took the room at the very end of the, of the museum. And some people only go on the first floor, you know,
are
the
there
older people.
Two floors, three floors?
There are two floors.
You have offices higher up, right?
Higher up is my own private collection.
There you go. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
And we have our big conference table where we have meetings.
Do you bring in... You know, I think I know this. You do bring in outside exhibits, but not that much. I mean, it's, you know, so is it static, depending on what you've brought in of your own, or do you bring in temporary exhibits?
No, I have a lot of artwork. I've purchased, I have one container, 40-foot container that just came from Europe. I have five more that are over there. We couldn't ship them during the COVID, unfortunately.
Here's a segue, though. The last time we talked, because I researched and read the story, and it's been a little while, but you were talking about opening more facilities, opening another St. Pete place, perhaps one in Clearwater.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to share with us?
I'd be happy to share. I've been working on that for 3 years.
I
hired the architect Big, and they're in New York and Europe. And now they're currently doing some multi-billion-dollar whole city that they're creating. But they're an amazing architecture firm, and they designed a spectacular building. You know,
Big? You said it was called Big?
That's the architecture firm, Bjarke Ingels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Big. I was just, okay.
Yeah,
I went off on a tangent there. Oh, they're big. Okay. Sorry. Sorry to interrupt.
So, yes. Yeah, so, they designed a very spectacular museum.
Where's this going?
Okay, so I worked with, you're not going to believe this, but it was Imagine Clearwater. Same name, huh?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So I've been working there for about 3 years trying to get this. I wanted the City Hall property.
Yeah.
And they have, it goes down the hill to the waterfront.
There's
a big garden area.
Uh-huh.
And I worked with the woman that was in charge there, and she brought people from the city here. And there was not one person that didn't flip out and absolutely loved the idea.
Yeah.
And so I've been working on that for quite a while, and unfortunately she got fired, and then they hired Jenkins, the new city manager, and he absolutely loved the museum, and I'm going to get this in. We're going to keep going on this.
Did you get the old City Hall building?
I did not get that.
This is part of Imagine Clearwater now.
This is the project Imagine Clearwater, but they fired the woman that was in charge, and then I was working with Jenkins, the new city manager. And I didn't bring one person down here who hasn't just absolutely loved the idea, loved the museum. So I've been working on it for 3 years. And then I met with the mayor, and we had a one-hour meeting. And then the last 5 minutes, he said, don't even think about it. Oh, I walked out of my office and cried. Took a big, deep breath.
Yeah.
And then I said, well, I got to go back in and talk to my staff because they're all waiting to hear the great news.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That's very disappointing news.
It was a tough time.
Politics in Clearwater are not easy. I mean, we all know that,
Not one bit easy.
No. So, but the project is not dead, I'm sure. That
not at all.
Something will come up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't give up on the idea. I just needed a couple months to have a breather on that bad news. But, I have the place designed, and I have almost a whole city block.
Wow.
Right downtown here.
I remember that. And part of what we talked about, too, if we take Clearwater off the table for just a second, was that you were going to expand down here.
Yeah.
Is that still happening now? The museum, if we haven't said, is it, I think, 1901 Central?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So you own the entire block?
Just about. There's one building that does not belong to me. But, I've been talking to people in the city, and they say, wait, put it off, because, I think we could only build so many stories, and now it's expanded to so many more stories. And they said, wait till 2023. It's, this whole city is really expanding, and so I could do art condos and have the museum underneath, or, so I put that on hold for that reason, because there are very influential people in the city that have told me to wait.
Mm-hmm. So, hurry up and wait. That's how it works. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought I would have the building actually done in Clearwater, but it just, like I said, I've been put off and put off and put off. Mm. So I thought I'd have that done. And then this would be my next project to really expand the museum, because I certainly have enough pieces that I built a whole warehouse in the meantime that's going to store all the pieces, and I can absolutely have traveling shows.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is in the future, yes, happening.
Yes,
it's a question of when and how and all
yep.
that.
Yes.
That's a beautiful thing.
I'm excited about it, honestly. Yeah. I'm enthused about it. I think it's going to be really exciting.
Oh, man. You have contributed so much to the artistic community here, and to, you know, they talk about St. Pete as a city of the arts, and I think that there are sort of keystones in what makes it the city of the arts, and I really do believe that the Imagine Museum is part of that, you know, more so than a couple of others, and I love them too, and we'll talk to them sometimes, but right now we're talking about Imagine, and if you haven't seen it, you really are missing out. It is spectacular. Go and see it now before it grows exponentially, which is coming in the future. My guest today has been Trish Duggan, who owns the Imagine Museum and founded the Imagine Museum and owns all the glass inside of it, which is so beautiful. Trish, thank you so very much.
Yeah, thank you, too. You know, we're in the top 10% of places to visit in the U.S. by TripAdvisor. We got number 2 after the Dolly Museum in St. Pete by the American Food and Wine.
Good news all around.
Yeah.
Good news all around. Well, thank you again, and we will hopefully talk to you again very soon.
Super. Thank you so much. Love the Catalyst.